Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Friday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Every Tuesday at 11:15, we talk to Predators General Manager David Poile. Well, he was a little busy this week, so we have shifted it to today. And every week, David's appearance on this show is brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. David, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Good game last night. We're just getting ready this morning, have a quick practice, and off to Dallas this afternoon for an afternoon game there tomorrow. So good weekend ahead of us.
How did last night's win affect your decision-making going into the trading deadline on what you're going to do or not do? Oh, wait a minute. Those questions are old. I was so used to asking that. That's right. I can't even use that one anymore. Your thoughts on...
Wow. David, I apologize for that. On behalf of
I thought I would have a little fun, Chase. Loosen up. Come on. In all seriousness, what was your takeaway from the general manager's meeting down in Boca Raton?
Not any too many things of great substance. I say that in a positive way, that I think the game is in a really good place on and off the ice. There's not a lot of people that are looking to, you know, do or change major things to the rules. For example, we did change the offside, which goes back, you know, several years, and specifically one that really hurt us in Pittsburgh in the finals there 3 years ago, when the first goal of the game when P.K. Subban scored, they had Philip Forsberg with a skate in the air type of situation. So now you just have to break the plane, very similar to football, for an offside or for a non-offside. And, man, I wish we would have had that rule in 3 years ago, but I guess better late than never.
So you're telling me they're not willing to go back and change it and give you guys game one?
Yeah, I'm telling you that.
But, dang it.
Other than that, the meetings were good. There wasn't too many things, like I said before. You know, everybody's looking forward to the future. There's a lot of good things that could be happening in the next couple of years. I mean, if we have a couple of years left in our collective bargaining agreement, that would be good, I think, on both sides, if maybe we could extend that a little bit. You have some TV deal that's coming up and could be renegotiated. So that could be really interesting to see where the NHL TV goes. So a lot of things like that on the sort of on the back burner at the moment.
We've been talking a lot this week about the controversial ending Saturday night versus Colorado, and a couple layers that maybe you guys will be discussing down there. Let's start with just the call in general. Is there a way for the league to help? I've said all week, I don't blame the refs for a bang-bang play like that. I think it's incredibly difficult with the naked eye to see all the layers that were taking place on that play in front of the net with just over 3 minutes to go. But with that being said, I also don't like the fact that you're emphatically making a call like you did see something, and I don't think you're in position to do that. Why not just let the play stand, as in it's a goal, and then let the thing play out with the rules in place, whether somebody wants to challenge from the bench, whether Toronto wants to look at it? But why make the call? Because then you affect things when you wave it off and make the call.
Well, you're saying it's exactly the way I would say it, and when you say it that way, it's for our benefit, not for the other team's benefit. The most ideal situation or fairest situation might have been no goal, no penalty, and that they have that in their arsenal to call that. Or you could call goal first, penalty second, if you believe or saw that the puck went in first. And again, that's they're dealing in real time, and that was such a bang bang play. But those are two options that could have happened. That is better than the third option, of which he went no goal penalty, which was the worst of all situations. Again, there's been a lot of discussion and you know, with myself and league officials and referees or what have you. I think at the end of the day, the referee truly believed that it was a penalty. We don't have to necessarily agree with that, but the end result is nothing was going to change, even if there was a challenge. And because if there was a challenge, then he would have to take down his penalty first, mm-hmm. then he would have to review the goal. So in the most ideal situation, it would be no penalty and then a good goal. But other referees that are supervisors and come to our meetings, I'm just being honest with you, they said that they would not have called the goal back, and that it was a penalty for interference. So that's what we have to live with.
Mm. That's disappointing to hear. The other layer to this, David, is just the communication or lack of sometimes. Sometimes there's great communication with the head official or head referee to the building. Well, I'm talking for the fans' sake, for broadcaster's sake, everybody in the building, you, all of us. And sometimes there's no communication. And I think all of us would like to see the league, everybody get on the same page and realize you have this device that enables you to speak to everybody there in the building. Why not make sure that they always do that? And I don't understand why sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
I think that's a very fair question. And I think, again, every once in a while there's a situation like this that I'm referring to as a bang-bang play, and there really hasn't been too many to reference back to in terms of comparison. So it was almost like neither team knew what was exactly going to happen. There was lots of discussion. If you remember, the goal was scored and then take it down. So the penalty. So now, instead of just starting the play, which you would after a goal, it went into a timeout. So there was a lot of discussion between our coaches and the officials on the ice. The officials huddled and talked about it. I don't know whether they were in communication with the war room in Toronto, but Darren, I really agree with what you're saying. I mean, for all of us, because I must say, even myself, I wasn't sure what the whole situation was, the sequence of events, and whether, you know, this could actually be taken down if you felt it was a mistake. So just another thing that we gotta do a better job on. And for the second time, absolutely, I think the fans are, everybody's entitled to know exactly what took place, because it was rather confusing.
As a lot of people have pointed out, the league is pretty healthy. So there were a whole lot of just huge controversial things that you guys have had to address here during these meetings. But one thing that does seem to come up every year is the actual playoff format. So down the road, do you think that could be adjusted back to something that we've seen in the past, the 1-8, regardless of division? Or do you think the league is still going to be entrenched in the way it is now, where you're much more likely to have to go through your own division?
Never say never, but right now we play an unbalanced schedule. The travel is different from one conference to the other. You know, in one of these situations, you got to be careful what you wish for type of situation. I mean, you could say that, and you could have a matchup. For example, it could be, say, us and St. Louis in the first round, but then you could have somebody like Dallas playing Edmonton, which if you do the 1-8, and I mean, I guess you could still have that now, but I think the fact that you have to go through your division almost, in all certainty, speaks of the value of keeping the standings and keeping an unbalanced schedule in terms of games that way. Again, I wish, like you, I think, could come up with a different or better formula, but I'm not sure that we have that. And until you have a balanced schedule, I don't think anything else is any more fair than the system that we have right now.
Right now, I don't have to tell you the log jam of teams in the wild card chase. It's really compelling every night. And last night had to be pretty encouraging, the way the team really rallied together. And for 60 minutes, I thought they really had a lot of attention to detail. And I'm sure that's something that they want to continue to try to build off of going forward here.
Yeah, a really good win for us. I mean, Dallas has been a real tough team for us to beat last year in the playoffs. Obviously, the Winter Classic this year, I mean, we've had some real negative situations when we're playing the Stars. So I think they're one of the better teams in the league, and I thought we played, you know, very, very well. It was a hard-fought game, and, you know, we scored a couple of goals to get a shutout. I mean, that's a great, great kind of a statement game for us. Now, of course, we play them again, and can we back that up with another strong performance down in Dallas? That's what we're going to try to do. And, you know, still looking to gain that momentum, like the other five or six teams that are in our conference that are trying to make the the playoffs. So, but I was really encouraged by how we played last night.
I heard John Hines say this after the game. The two guys that scored the goals, Matt Duchene and Philip Forsberg, he said similar things, that he had started to see the right things in their game, and there were games where they just weren't getting the points on the score sheet, which is, of course, at the end of the year, that's what you got to have. You got to have a certain amount of results. But they broke through last night. But are you seeing the same things in those two guys in particular? Because you can see the difference that those guys can make in a game. Those guys were forces pretty much every time they went on the ice last night.
Yeah, I agree. I think they've both been getting, you know, pretty good looks. You know, but for whatever reason, there's two of the more talented players in the league, and they've always scored at a very high rate. And I mean, I know like Philip has never gone through anything like this in his life, and I'm probably the same for Duchene. Like earlier in the game, there was a 2-on-1. I think it was Turris pass to Philip, and he just had to really elevate the puck and hit the net, and he elevated it, but he missed the net. And like I'm thinking last few years, I mean, that's almost an automatic for Philip. But I guess that just shows how hard he's pressing. But I'm sure happy they both scored last night. And we all know that, you know, everybody feeds off of confidence, not only in hockey, but in other walks of life. And I'm just hoping and getting a strong feeling that maybe this is going to get both of these guys going in the right direction, because we really need their offense. I mean, we've been playing better defensively, but we need to get our offense back. It's been missing here a little bit. Those two guys could really help a lot by getting on a roll here offensively.
David Poile is with us, Predators general manager. It was also the Preds' debut for Corbinian Holzer, the defenseman that you acquired at the trade deadline. I know John Hines had a lot of nice things to say about his game, but what did you see?
Not flashy. A player that really knows his role, defensive role. I thought he killed penalties really well. I love the visual of Tenorti and Holzer, two big redwoods back on the D, and it was kind of hard to get into our net last night. And, you know, penalty killing has not been our strong suit this year, and maybe we found something there with Holzer. I would have to think he would get another chance here to play in Dallas, and if he can contribute from the defensive standpoint and play with Tenorti, that could be a small but very important change in our team that might pay some real dividends for us.
I use Monday as a little bit of an outlier because it was just a game that everybody would want to have back. But Pekka's role has been different as of late. And when he's come in, I mean, he's been pretty good for the most part. UC has also played well. But what have you seen out of Pekka that you know, as he's accepted kind of this role that he's in currently? We know things can constantly change, but what have you seen from him, and what does it say about him of how he's accepted this role?
Well, I don't know if he's accepted that role. I think I've talked to Pekka when we signed his contract, you know, last year about, you know, the game plan and the inevitable part that, you know, someday, you know, UC would have to take over. And, you know, you say those things, and, you know, it's in a non-competitive situation, you understand. But I mean, Pekka is very competitive, and, you know, I think he had a tough outing there the other night, but overall, I think he's still playing real well. I truly believe that he's going to win games for us here down the stretch. I mean, a lot of opportunities, a lot of back-to-back games, and I never will count Pekka out ever. I mean, he's played really well, a little bit more of a struggle this year, but I'm still counting on him to be a good goaltender and to win some games for us. I like the competition between here, he and Juice, and he's always been the kind of the face of our franchise, in my opinion, and you know, goaltenders at different times go through some struggles. I get it. He's older now. And so, you know, people are probably thinking that maybe this is the start of a serious decline, but I still believe he's got some gas in the tank.
David, I thought it was a nice pregame ceremony, the moment of silence, and Nashville strong, everything for the victims of the tornadoes. But what have you made of all the outpouring of support from the rest of the league? And I know Craig Leopold and Barry Trotz had some nice words, but what has that been like to see?
Well, first of all, I was at the general manager's meeting, so I missed the tornado. And, you know, when I woke up that morning, my phone was, you know, blown up with texts and messages, and it was just a shocker. But, you know, talking to Sean Henry, our president, I'm so proud of our organization and what they always do and participate in the community. I remember, you know, coming here like 22 years ago, and I tell a story all the time, is that, you know, Tennessee Volunteers, okay, the Tennessee Vols. I didn't know what that meant exactly, but I sure do now. And it's just like any charitable situation. The more you give, the more you get back. And, you know, for the Predators, that's been a mantra of ours from day one, to participate in the community. And it's really sad what took place. But again, I'm proud of being a Nashvilleian and proud of all of what's taking place and all the people that are participating with donations of money, donations of their time. And there's no question that we'll get this area cleaned up and people back on their feet sooner than maybe somebody would ever expect. So it's a sad situation that happened, but as we said, maybe we'll be stronger than ever before because of it.
Well said. We could not agree anymore. Thanks for doing this as always. Enjoy the road trip, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
Have a great weekend. Week. All right. David Poile, Predators general manager. Preds will be in action tomorrow afternoon down in Dallas. It'll be a 1 o'clock puck drop. 1 o'clock puck drop tomorrow. So a little matinee hockey pregame at noon. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. David's visits with us every week brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Predators going to hit the road for a little bit. We know the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament is in town next week. We'll actually be over there Thursday and Friday doing our show. We're looking forward to that. A little bit different, by the way, since the SEC passed selling alcohol, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Where we were was always like a private VIP area in Barrel House because there was only just a few select spots that they could do that. It was not open for anybody just to walk up and get a drink. And this is going to be the first time that you can.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Of the new rule.
There were I remember there were a couple times we were in there and they had it all roped off, and you'd have some people that
they had last year, if you remember, they had a curtain up.
Yeah.
We literally couldn't even see the concourse.
You have to go around.
You had to go all the way around.
Couldn't take your drink out.
Right. Well, yeah, but they had it all closed off. I mean, we're just staring at a curtain and barrels blocking off. We couldn't even get out unless we slid out the door and then slid behind the curtain to go get out in the concourse. But that's all going to be different now, which is cool. But anyway, the team will be in Dallas tomorrow to take on the Stars. And that was a much-needed 2 points. We've been talking about it. I think realistically, this team going into last night's game needed 22 of 32 points. I think, I don't think you could think anything less than that and feel good about it, right?
Yep, they had to win.
That would put them at 92 points, and that to me is the floor. Like, that's the lowest you could possibly and hope that you would get in. Or no, 22. No, that would have been 94.
Yeah, 94. 94. I feel pretty good about 94.
Yeah.
But I think you're looking right at
anything
it.
Less than
so
that.
So you essentially need 20 more points if you're going on that.
20 of 30. 20 of 30.
That's tough. I mean, that you're asking a lot, but
I don't know.
It's
definitely
doable.
Know that you have to, but I think that's what you're shooting for to feel, you know. Feel sure that
and the schedule is not easy. I mean, you're at Dallas,
no,
and then
the
Montreal, Toronto.
Let's just tell it like it is. The schedule is tough.
Yeah,
the schedule is tough.
Now, will you guys come back since there are 2 days in between Dallas and Montreal, or do you go straight to Montreal?
Coming back.
That's what I figured. So you have that, and then it's a 5-game road trip, but then. Come back for a little bit, and then Montreal, Toronto, Columbus, at Minnesota again, and that's a tough stretch there. Not to mention Colorado back here in Philadelphia, who's been playing well.
The next 3 weekends after this weekend, in other words, the final 3 weekends of the month, are all back to backs.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, Sundays.
Let's go to our friends' sports club stats and get into that 92, 93, 94 point thing, right? The Predators right now at 74 with seemingly 12 other teams.
Yeah. Right.
Crispy was so funny last night. He just started reading the teams. 74, 74, 74. You know, it's like there's a host of teams in there. So let's just say.
Well, things changed last night after we left the arena.
Yeah, Minnesota got a big win out in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
So, right now, if you were to get 18 more points, that puts you at 92. Your record would be 9-6 or 8-5-2. 92 points right now in the West. And this is why it's important to keep checking this, because it changes, right? Maybe a few weeks ago, 92 would have said, that's a pretty good chance. Now it is about a two-thirds chance you would make it, between 65 and 70% that you could get in with 92. So there's that's a good chance.
That's actually better than I thought.
Well, it can change.
I thought it'd be more like 55%.
91 points. It drops considerably down.
That's
to
gotta be below 40, 50.
42%. Yeah. So then you go up to, like you were saying before, 94, which would be 10-5 or 9-4-2 or 8-3-4. If that, you never know with the overtime games. Now you're up to 95-96%. So 10 more wins. If you win 10 out of 15, you're 96%. But that's what it's looking like right now with so many teams in there. But remember, this is subject to change. It changes every night, these percentages.
That's why you got to keep watching the standings.
But it's been, there's two ways to look at that. You can't panic when all of a sudden you appear like three more rungs down the ladder on a particular night. Mm-hmm. We were talking about it a week ago. Like, it was precarious even though they had moved up into the playoff spot. But you just can't rely on other teams to just bow out of the race. And then all of a sudden you lose two or three. You lose ground, but you can't panic. So that was a good stabilizing performance. But I think if you just keep that in mind, just say, listen, we get to 94, 95, we'll do our job. We're going to take care of our own business. Let's not mess around with 91, 92 and then have to have help and have everything go your way.
Yeah, well, and think about this, because this is something we've discussed on the show. Of now, the gaggle's bigger. I mean, you have Calgary, I would still put in that group, even though they're in the third spot in the Pacific. Minnesota, Vancouver, Nashville, Winnipeg, Arizona, Chicago will not go away. So they're still in this. None of these teams want to run away with it. And we've been waiting after the deadline of, okay, one of these teams is going to take the baton and run. Calgary was okay for a while. They're still in that third spot, but they're 2 points from being in the wild card. Vancouver has lost four in a row, yet they're still there. They're still hanging around. And then, as I mentioned, Nashville, Winnipeg, Arizona, and Chicago's won four in a row.
The only team they have remaining on their schedule that's truly out, I mean they're out, is Los Angeles here. That's it.
Yeah. Who, by the way, has won seven out of ten, four in a row.
Now, how crazy is that?
Beat the Maple Leafs last night, 1-0 in a shootout. They shut the Maple Leafs out.
And with all that being said, they have 58 points.
So I just don't want to hear
that
anybody
just tells
say
you
it.
How
so
bad
you,
they
so
are.
You just don't say you should beat this team. It's so crazy at the end of the season, the loose teams that have nothing to play for.
They do because they're playing for next season. So that's what happens. You get a lot of scrappy, hungry people that are playing for their careers for next year. So that's what you get.
Who did Ottawa beat last night? Ottawa just beat somebody last night. Ottawa is on fumes. They beat the Islanders.
Well, the Islanders have been slipping lately.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. There are absolutely no gimmies, no matter who you're playing. No gimmies.
Islanders right now are the last team in right now in the Eastern Conference.
I think there's some coaches that would almost rather play another team that is fighting to get in or in a similar spot, or even a team that is going to be in the playoffs. You would put Dallas in this category. They're going to be in the playoffs. They're just waiting for the playoffs to start. I would be interested to know how many coaches, if you polled all 31 coaches and said, would you rather play a team down the stretch that's loose and out of it, but playing well, or a team that's going to be in the playoffs or a team that's on the bubble just like yourself? I wonder what kind of different answers you would get.
Yeah, I would say Montreal is probably – I mean, they're barely hanging
they
on.
They are, but, I mean, they're not – I mean, I'm saying LA's out. It doesn't matter what they do the rest of the way. Like,
sure.
They're out. Montreal is on life support.
But you have Montreal on life support. So those three games against the East, Montreal's on life support. Toronto, I mean, they're looking pretty good right now as they're the third spot, but they're trying to hang on to that third spot. They're fighting with Columbus. So Columbus is another one next week. So, look, those Eastern teams, too, are going to be coming with all they got. So,
100%.
And then Philadelphia.
It's going to be unbelievable. Philadelphia is going to be in the playoffs.
They've won 8 in a row.
Philadelphia is on a whole new level than what you might have thought a couple months
ago. They are 24-5-4 at home. Just think about that. They have played 33 home games, and only 5 of them have resulted in 0 points. 5 of 33 at home.
You got two. You got to play them twice.
In fact, they may be the best home team in the league. They are. They're the best home team in the league.
They have the most wins.
24 home wins. Yeah, they're on a heat. They've won 8 in a row. They're absolutely crushing it. Right now, they can win that division easily.
That's pretty scary. They absolutely could win that
division. Talking about coming out of nowhere. All right, we'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Boston, before we get out of here this hour, speak with Karen Garigian from Boston Herald. I don't know if you heard, but there's news surrounding Tom Brady. Well, not really. Just more people reporting stuff. But we'll talk about that coming up in about 10 minutes. You just made the list with a twist at noon. Also, Greg Wyshynski in the third hour. And then, of course, pick six. Cannot wait for pick six at 1.
I'm looking forward to it.
Pumped. Me too. Willie, how about you?
Willie, your thoughts?
I got great questions.
Do you?
No. Do you have? How about your answers?
That's another story.
How have your answers been to your questions?
Very puzzling.
0.8% success rate.
Yep.
I thought I had the goose egg. I really did.
You didn't.
You did.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I avoided the goose.
No, I know, but you thought you did.
I thought I did. I was in the press box, resigned to the fact on Tuesday, because remember part of it continued over to Tuesday's game against the Wild, and I'm thinking, I think I just got a zero.
No, it was in the Edmonton game.
No, the Tuesday's game in Minnesota counted towards the pick six.
It did?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I thought it was
a three-game package, Duchesne and Johansson versus Arvidsson and Forsberg in the three games.
I was thinking of the McDavid, Draisaitl.
No, that was in McKinnon, the bag. That was in the bag on Monday.
Oh, yeah, clearly. I was with you on that one. I went down in flames, too.
It was actually Oilers, not Flames.
Yeah, it wasn't Calgary. That's a good point. Or Calgary. But we'll review that and make our picks at 1 o'clock.
Indeedly-doo.
We've been watching Mike Vrabel on Good Morning Football. He made appearance today. And he talked a lot about Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill and Tom Brady. All the usual suspects or checklists that you could imagine being asked on a talk show. It's pretty interesting when you hear John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. They're not going to tell you anything. But if you just are in the business of just listening to what they're saying and just trying to come up with your own conclusions, doesn't it feel like they definitely talk differently about Derrick Henry than Ryan Tannehill, even though they're not saying anything about either one of them? The conversation just sounds different. And you say, well, what sounds different? It sounds like Derrick Henry, there's no chance he's getting out of here. I don't know how they're going to keep him here, but it just seems like he is a higher priority. How about this? He's a higher priority. I put it. Yeah. I put it that way, because they just talk differently about him than they do Tannehill.
I can translate, because you know you get GM speak and you get coach speak, and they're like, you know, and you get it for both of them. But this is the translation. When John Robinson is asked about Derrick Henry, well, yeah, we need to get him re-signed because, we don't really have any other options there. So he did a really good job for us, and we'd like to have that back. So we're going to go ahead and get that one done, and, that'll be good. Ryan Tannehill. Yeah, he did all right. You know, got us to the playoffs, AFC Championship game. But, you know, Tommy's out there too, so we got a couple options there. Not as much of a rush on that one, but we'll get around to it.
That's your translation?
That's how I translate it.
Was that J-Rob?
That was J-Rob.
Or Vrabes, or both?
Could be both, but mainly J-Rob. Vrabes would be like, you know, Vrabes would be like, well, you know, Derrick Henry, he's a good football player. Yeah, I want him back. Yeah, I'm going to need him back. I'm going to need that guy in the backfield. Ryan Tannehill, really appreciate him. Did a good job. Hang on, Tom's calling. Hang on a second.
I'll be right back with you guys.
Yeah, hang on.
Hey, what's up, Tommy? How are you?
That's what that
Tommy!
Is.
Tommy!
Yeah.
Rames, what's up, man?
I'm over in Europe at a soccer game. You want to come?
Tom Brady has still not replied to my tweet.
What?
I know. I'm very, very upset about it. But
in all seriousness, it's just different. You can tell, like, the conversation piece is different. I mean, if you're having a ranking system, there's no doubt. Which is interesting, because if you were to ask most people, because of the way everybody values or devalues the running back and how important the quarterback position is, you would always think the quarterback position would be number one on the list. But in this case, I think if you were able to sneak into their private room, Derrick Henry's at the top of the list, not the quarterback.
I feel like if I were ever a fly on the wall, as they say, in one of those meetings, I wouldn't know how to process it with some of the stuff that they probably talk about. Like a team in general, not just the Titans, but going through this whole process, I would be fascinated by it. And, you know, Floyd, I mean, we're lucky to work with Floyd that can shed a little light on what it's like, but just the amount of conversations that they probably have. And I think if you're doing your job, you have to have different scenarios. You have to have the scenario where it basically looks the same. You have Tannehill, Henry. You have the without Henry, without Tannehill, with Brady, without Brady. You know, there are different scenarios that you have to have. How does the money work? I'd be curious to see what that looked like. We'll never do that. That'll never happen. But it'd be interesting.
If you could pick a room to be in, a room, I'm leaving that very wide open, what would the room be? The room could be the review room. NHL, you know, on a
so
night
this
of,
is not limited to a league.
No.
This is whatever.
Just if you could pick a room to be in, what room would you pick?
Ooh, that is a good question.
Would you want to pick a room with David Poyle and staff on trading deadline day? See how that whole thing goes down? Would you like to go the war room, John Robinson and Vrabel and the Titans? Let's say on draft day? First day of the draft, or actually just the whole draft process? What room would you want to be in?
I think I would want to be in the room with Robinson and Vrabel on like a day like today leading up to free agency in the draft whenever those conversations are happening.
Maybe, so you'd rather do it now than the actual days when real
maybe
you want to be in leading up to it rather than be in
and,
it?
And I'll get even more specific. I would want to be in a room with them at the combine when the tampering happens. When there have been conversations, so if John and this is all speculation, if John and Vrabel are sitting there talking and Vrabel can walk in and John can walk in and be like, yeah, I bumped into Don Yee, Tom Brady's agent, bumped into him. And this is what he told me. Or so-and-so talked to Billy O, who talked to Josh McDaniels, who talked to Tom Brady, or you know, something like that when those conversations happen. That's where I'd want to be.
I think I would love to be in the, just because I love doing it every year, I would love to be in the NCAA tournament selection room. I'd love to be in on that. Watch how that goes down. How some of those final decisions are made on seeds and who gets in, all that stuff.
I think I'd like to – look, this is a tough one. I could come up with a whole list. The combine, the private meetings, you wouldn't believe what they ask these kids and how they set them up and how they know stuff, and they want to see how they're going to answer them. Like, they have the goods on people. Have you ever, experimented with, marijuana? You ever been around it? And we'll see how they're going to answer.
Yeah.
You know, if they're like, no, sir, absolutely not. And, of course, they know that, you know, the kid's been busted with 3 pounds of pot. And, you know, they're like, huh, well, that's interesting. What if we told you that, you know, we've seen the stuff like I'd love to be in those, because some of those things, and I know they've been, because so much has come out publicly of the questions that have been said, so it's been a little bit nicer over the years, but those meetings are interesting to me. Like, what, how they go about with these kids, what they say to them.
And if I'm a GM, I would appreciate it. Like, if I'm talking to Donick and he says, yeah, you know, I smoked a little in college. I tried it, you know, but that was about it. I would appreciate the honesty more than anything.
Well, and you get those kids, and that's how teams fall in love with people. Yeah. Because they blow it away in the interview process.
Well, if you're specifically talking about marijuana, about blowing it away, I would have to think that those questions are probably more easily asked and answered than maybe 10, 20 years ago. It's just the perception of the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the whole collective bargaining agreement, that's
right
in the package, right?
Yep.
How the league handles marijuana. Because the increasing amount of states are much more, whatever you want to call it, blasé, loose. It's just not.
It's probably
legal
not.
It's 100% legal in a lot of NFL cities.
I'd probably change my answer, because today it's not as. I'd probably want to go back like a decade ago and be in those interviews. They're different than they are today.
Yeah. Well, just for that issue, but they're not. It's not different in a lot of ways, right? You're just looking to see if. You might have your information, and you're just going to see if the guy is going to be honest with you. And then there's questions that we've talked about a lot that are probably out of bounds that they ask anyway, right?
Personal. I think they've done that less because it's been made public. Like, a lot of people have come out and said, you know, can you believe they asked me this? And so the teams have been kind of shamed into, did you really say that to that kid? So they don't. I think it's been lessened, and it's a little bit lighter than maybe it used to be. All right, we'll come back, head up to Boston to close out the hour next. Back here at Darren Donick and Chase on this Friday. Karen Garigian with the Boston Herald. She's been all over this Brady stuff and the Patriots. Man, there's going to be, it's going to be an about to be a really active month. A lot of stuff is about to start, whether you can tag players, free agency. Business, as they say, is about to pick up. And Karen is on the line with us. Karen, how you doing?
Hey, good, Darren. How are you?
Doing fantastic. We've, as you can imagine, talked a lot about the situation up in your neck of the woods on what it means for the Titans. But let's just start with your reporting of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, which, by the way, Bill Belichick has been in our area a lot here these days, down in Murfreesboro and in Nashville. But they, I guess, evidently met, and according to you, things didn't go well. What did you hear?
Well, it was basically a phone call. It was not a face-to-face meeting. And I'm just basically under the understanding that from Brady's side, it didn't go particularly well. Now, I'm sure Bill Belichick will probably think him basically playing up to who he is, which isn't a lot of fun, would probably think it went well from his side. But I know for certain from the Brady side, Brady didn't leave the phone call thinking he was jumping back to New England.
What do you think Brady is looking for at this stage in his career? What's his list of importance, in your opinion?
Well, I think he wants to be in a situation, first and foremost, where he has a chance to win another title. I mean, you know, someone like, you know, Tampa or whoever might throw a ton of money at him, but, you know, his window is short in closing. You know, he's looking at about two more years. He wants to hit 45 because he's been saying 45. So if he goes into a situation where it's going to take a while to get to that spot, he might not, you know, last that long. As it is, he's already defying logic and reason by how well he can perform at age 42 going on 43. So I don't, he doesn't want to walk in a rebuild. He doesn't want to walk in a situation where, you know, teams have to make a million moves to try and compete. I think he's looking for a team, whether it's the Patriots or somebody else, that's going to give him a good opportunity to win.
National people are weighing in on this. We've talked about it a bunch in this market. I know they're talking about it in your market. What would you assess the, I guess, the percentages at this point in your mind of him returning back to the Patriots? Is it more than 50%, less than 50%?
I'd say it's slightly under 50% at this point. But, of course, that can change. I think the Patriots might be counting on or banking on the fact that Brady doesn't have a big market or isn't going to go to a lot of places or wouldn't want to go to a lot of places that might show interest, that his field is very narrow or his choices are very narrow. And he'll ultimately see that, again, his best option is coming back home, so to speak.
Karen Garigian is with us from the Boston Herald covering the New England Patriots. So, Karen, if the headline in the Boston Herald at some point is Brady leaves to go elsewhere, how do you think that would be received among the fan base? What percentage of the fan base would be ready or at least be rational enough to say the old Bill Belichick theory, it's better to let a guy go too early than too late?
Well, I think there's, I think it's a little mixed at this point because I think there's still a huge percentage of the fandom that believe that at the last minute or last hour or whatever, the 11th hour, something will happen, that either Robert Kraft will swoop in and things will change and you know, it's almost like disbelief, you know, at this point, that he could actually be starting quarterback at it for another team. So I think there's a large segment that still thinks it's okay, it's going to work out. But when you have reports that have been going out recently, like the one I put out, that the initial conversation didn't go particularly well, I think now fans are nervous about Brady not being there. That being said, they don't know what, if he does go away, what the solution will be here. I mean, will they go with a second-year quarterback, Jarrett Stidham, who they really don't know much about, or do they go elsewhere? And who is the elsewhere? I mean, there's been talk about Andy Dalton. Now, do you think New England fans are going to prefer Andy Dalton over Tom Brady? No, not for
no.
a second.
Yeah.
Well, let's ask it this way, Karen. Do you think that the Patriots have any thought of, you know, if Brady goes elsewhere, it's just time to reset, rebuild? Or do you think they are full go, we believe we can win the Super Bowl again next year?
Well, I think it comes down to Bill Belichick. And I'm not sure, even for him, at his stage of his career, at age 68, I'm not sure if he would actually completely blow it up and completely rebuild. I think with the pieces that are in place and some that they would have to re-sign, I think that the defense is very good. It's just a matter of the offense and how, again, what you decide to do with the quarterback. So I think they will sort of rebuild in some aspect, try to get a little younger because they have the oldest roster on the planet. But as for him blowing it up totally, I cannot see that happening.
We're talking to Karen Garigian of the Boston Herald. So, you know, building off of that a little bit, let's say Brady does leave and, you know, Belichick coaches this year. How much longer could you see him actually doing this if he doesn't want to blow it up and doesn't want to necessarily go through a rebuild? Could he coach one more year and say, I'm out?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on. One, there's all, and I think it pertains to both Brady and Belichick. You know, how much of people think, if people think the Patriots' 6 Super Bowls and success was just because of Brady, well, Belichick would probably like to show them, hey, I can coach a little bit. I can still bring a team to a Super Bowl without Tom Brady. There might be a part of that, and also Belichick not wanting to rebuild, that he'll want to be as competitive without Tom Brady and kind of show people, hey, it wasn't just Tom Brady. The other thing is he is in sort of shouting distance of Don Shula for the all-time coaching win mark. And, you know, obviously he won't get it if he retires next year. But I think it's doable with a winning team for him to pass Shula within the next 4 or 5 seasons. So that could also maybe be in the back of his mind.
How much credence do you give to the whole relationship between Brady and Mike Vrabel and obviously John Robinson's past with the Patriots, and that the Titans could end up being the destination for Tom?
Well, I think two things are at play for the Titans. One, if there's this undercurrent of interest with Brady, it might help drive the price for Ryan Tannehill down. Now, they've expressed wanting to re-sign him. I believe they've spoken to him. But I also hear he's trying to command top dollar. So this talk or rumors of the Titans moving on to Brady perhaps will help them in their negotiation with Tannehill. Flipping it in another direction, obviously Vrabel and Mike and Tom Brady are very tight. They're friends. You know, does Mike Vrabel and John Robinson see the difference getting over the Kansas City hurdle or making the next step to get to the Super Bowl at quarterback? Obviously, Brady knows how to get the job done. He's not what he was in his prime, but I think he's good enough still with a good supporting cast around him, and that means weapons on offense and a Derrick Henry running the football, that he might get a team like the Titans over the top. So I think Vrabel and John Robinson have to be weighing that.
Karen, we really appreciate the visit. Thanks so much for doing this, and it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out.
I know. Can't wait, but we still have a little time to go.
A little bit longer. Hey, have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Karen Garigian, her work can be found at Boston Herald, and you just heard it. What are the chances in your mind right now today of Tom Brady returning to the Patriots? Her answer, less than 50%.
Yep. Find that interesting. We were talking
less
about it earlier.
Less than 50%.
I thought it was interesting she threw out Andy Dalton. But, I mean, wouldn't you have to think that one of the possible outcomes if Brady leaves and goes to the Titans that Tannehill would end up
sure
with the Patriots?
I've seen Tampa linked to Tannehill.
I think there are a lot of options.
It's going to be a musical chairs.
I've heard Mariota's name brought up with the Patriots.
Oh, yeah, yeah. By Tim Hasselbeck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as a starter, but as a project.
But if you bring him in, if it's Mariota and Jared Stidham, that is called a competition. That's what that is going into.
Sure.
Yep. We'll come back, kick off the third hour with You Just Made the List with a Twist. That's next.